One of the challenges some people have in their lives is making friends. I'm one of those people. Last year, I moved from Vancouver to Toronto, and I realized I had to start all over again. I had to make new friends. I had to go out and meet people. I had to decide if I liked them, and they had to decide if they liked me. So, on today's show, this is the story of my first new friend in Toronto. I'm Scott C. Jones, and this is Heavily Pixelated. When I was new in Toronto, a friend of mine invited me out for a night of socializing with a group of screenwriters. I'll be honest, I did not want to go out, but then again, I never want to go out. That's just how I am. But I went anyway. I wanted to be the first to arrive, but when I got there, a man was sitting alone at a table in the corner of this bar, and the man was drinking a can of Coca-Cola, and I honestly could not remember the last time I'd seen someone so openly drinking a can of Coke. It seemed eccentric somehow. His name was James. He's a writer and a filmmaker. He professed his love for two things that mean an awful lot to me: cats and video games. James told me how he had thoroughly enjoyed the movie Arrival, but that he'd hated, absolutely hated, the movie Interstellar.
Hated it.
It's the correct answer, my friend.
Hated it. Hated it so much. I was so checked out of that movie that by the time the big emotional climax happened, where he was in like the magic library or whatever the fuck at the end, I was laughing. Like, well, like, tears were coming down his eyes while we were rewatching all the events of the movie and finding out he was the ghost the whole time.
Right.
I was chuckling in my chair. Like, the people next to me, like, were giving me, like, serious eyeballs. I was like, sorry.
And that was it. That was the moment. That's when I knew that this cat-loving, video game-playing, Coke-drinking weirdo, he and I were supposed to be friends. Shortly after this, our courtship continued. James and I would see Rogue One together. And I asked James to be a guest on my podcast, and he gave me a terrific interview, a moving interview. He talked about the death of his grandmother and how her death had affected his family. He told me how his family had gathered one last time in his grandmother's now empty home to divide up her belongings.
I drove down there and it was like, this is going to be so awkward. Like, I didn't really want to do it, but I understood the purpose behind it. But like, then I got there and I'm sitting in this house and she's not there. And it's just kind of this morbid yard sale.
In case you're wondering, James got a record player and an old painting. That's all he wanted.
But usually when I, you know, when I'm having a shitty time and stuff, like, I just try and envelope myself in distractions, like stuff that can preoccupy my mind, and mostly like just staying at home and sitting around by myself playing video games.
Games often help people through difficult times in their lives, and through this particular difficult time, that game for James was Mass Effect.
Prior to this happening, my time killer of choice was Overwatch. And I was playing it almost every night for a couple hours. Like, I have a bunch of friends that are playing it, so I play with my friends and stuff. And they're all playing it just as adamantly as they were, but I retreated into Mass Effect and have not picked up like a multiplayer game or anything like that since, because I just wasn't in the headspace for it. I think there's something really satisfying about having some control over the way things go when you're dealing with something that you could never have done anything about. I really get into the role-playing aspect of it. It's not just what would be fun in the moment. It's like almost like creating a narrative for her. I played a very altruistic Shepard. She always tried to help people, always tried to do what was the perception of the right thing or the smart thing at the time. The second one isn't as morally black and white as the first one is. which is great because it keeps you in the moment a little more and keeps you thinking about the character and works, you know, works that distraction muscle really strongly and helps immerse you in into the moment. And you have to be paying attention to what everybody's saying. You have to be, you know, you have to be thinking about the consequences of your actions, you know, hours later, you know, what the domino effect could be of your choices and stuff like that. But I always tried to be, you know, as much as possible like the hero, you know, even if there was, you know, just a stupid side quest of like some guy, you know, who doesn't even have a name just off to the side in like one of the hub worlds who needed a favor that, you know, required me to go to some distant planet and find like one item and bring it back to him. I was like, I'll be right back, buddy. Like,
you know, I think what James is saying here is really interesting. If I'm playing a video game and I'm going through something in my life, I'll play the game a little differently than I normally would. I'll behave more humanely. I'll be kinder to characters, even the smallest, least powerful character in the game. I asked him if he felt like the game made him feel any better.
I don't know if they make me feel better, because the minute I'm not doing them anymore, I kind of am like, oh yeah, like stuff still sucks right now.
Yeah.
But they do a good job of at least getting me out of my head for a while. And I find the more I'm able to do that, like the longer stretches I go and stuff like that, like when I come back and it's softer a little bit each time.
While I was editing that first interview, and I was really excited about that first interview, some new information came to light. Information that made me realize there was a bigger story to tell here. James is no longer a man. He has always had feelings that he didn't understand, and he's decided that those feelings were telling him for years and years that he's actually a woman. He's going to honor those feelings. And so he's declared himself transgender. I'll be honest with you, I don't really understand this, but I'm open to the prospect of, you know, that I might be friends with Ashley, which is James's new name. His name is Ashley now. When I was a kid, I remember seeing a prominent male comedian on television who was, for some bizarre reason, you know, to participate in a sketch, dressed up as a woman. Maybe it was somebody like Bob Hope or Milton Berle. I think maybe it was Milton Berle. He was still Milton Berle, but he had a dress on, he had a wig on, he had makeup on. And to somehow make matters worse, he was smoking a cigar at the same time that he was dressed up as a woman. And I remember this image just terrifying me, or confusing my six-year-old brain. I didn't know who he was anymore. I didn't understand. And I think that fear and that confusion and the perplexed feelings I had have carried over into my feelings about transgender people. The gaming community is a very open, very evolved community. Every game developers conference I attend, everyone knows where the gender-neutral bathrooms are. I see men who used to be women, and I see women who used to be men. It's kind of normal at this point. I'd seen them around, but I just kind of always turned a blind eye towards them. I didn't really understand them. I didn't know why they had made the choices they had made. And so it was just kind of easier for me not to look at them at all. But now I had a friend right in front of me. Someone who I've become fond of, someone who I felt protective of. And he is telling me that he is actually a she. And it's personal for me now. I have to face my uncomfortableness now. Ashley arrived for a do-over interview. She has long red hair, a wig, obviously, and she's wearing makeup. She's taller than I remember her being as a man, and she's more intimidating to me now. Ashley's the guy who I saw Rogue One with about 2 months ago. I'm still trying to make sense of all this. Here's Ashley.
I was, you know, I was a couple weeks into all of it that we were talking last time, and it was all that I was thinking about. Because I was going through all of that stuff with my Oma, but I was also dealing with all of this stuff at the same time. Like sitting there across from you while you're like poking and prodding, and I was like, this could be a very different conversation, but I'm just too chicken shit to say anything. You were definitely getting a censored version, because like when we sat down the last time and you were like,
oh, like, tell me about the stuff that you're working through while you were playing the game and stuff like that. And I was like, fuck, man, if you only knew. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I so badly just wanted to be like, I'm a girl. Like, but like...
I was nervous to meet Ashley, legitimately nervous. But it didn't take long for us to find some common ground again.
I think probably the most affecting thing that I've played is the Mass Effect trilogy, like in like recent memory. Like I played the first one like a year ago, but I was mere hours into number two when this all kind of came crashing down.
For those who don't know, you can play the Mass Effect trilogy in its entirety either as a man or as a woman. James, of course, played as a woman.
I kind of spent the whole time with Shepard as my surrogate, basically, going out into the world and kind of being the woman I wanted to be, like flying around in a fucking spaceship, saving the day and making out with sexy blue aliens and stuff. And being this like badass super bitch and not, you know, and coincidentally, like she's a redhead, you know, like my Shepard was a redhead and a badass. Didn't think of anything of it at the time, you know, like everything else in my life. I tried to make her the best version of me, as empathetic as possible, but don't you dare fuck with my friends or, you know, or bring the rain. Doing my best to like make sure that my whole team, you know, made it out of the suicide mission at the finale of two, forming very strong bonds with all of these characters who were like in like my headcanon, were like the only people that knew what was going on with me at the time because I was too afraid to fucking tell anybody else. Kind of funny because I used to joke before that when I would describe what I looked like to people, I would tell them that I looked like the default settings on an RPG create a character because I'm just like a very generic looking white guy with short brown hair and scruff that tends to be like the box art of every PlayStation 4 and Xbox game at EV. The idea now that I actually get to customize who I am is kind of funny.
RPG is an acronym for role-playing game. And in those games, you get to create your own character, dress him or her however you like, give her attributes like intelligence and strength. But at the very start of the character creation process, the character, the virtual character, stands there naked, like an adult baby, waiting for you to dress her. And the game won't start until you dress her.
When I have a beard, there's a red tinge to my beard, and I was always kind of like upset that it didn't migrate north, you know, because I always just thought brown hair, it was so like, bleh. There wasn't a lot going on with it. And I was always afraid to dye it because that meant I cared what I looked like, and that became a slippery slope for me. It was like, oh, I can have red hair, I can have all of these different wardrobe options. I already have a wider variety of clothing options since December than I ever did. It's really freeing to kind of get to reinvent yourself and to just start from scratch and get to decide who you are, you know, anew, which is not an opportunity I think a lot of people get or take. I didn't have a taste in fashion before because I didn't like men's fashion. I owned like one suit that I wore to anything that was remotely fancy, weddings, funerals, didn't matter, graduations, whatever. I would just constantly outgrow that, or it would become ill-fitting because I would lose weight and then I'd replace it. And I had one pair of boots, one pair of running shoes, one pair of like walking around shoes. Like everything was as economic and bare bones as it could be because again, like I just didn't care. I probably spent more time dressing RPG characters than I ever did myself. It's amazing how like coming to terms with all of this kind of puts a lot of your prior life into perspective.
I told Ashley that I was still struggling, still trying to figure all of this out.
Part of everybody's reaction is, I know that you're still you, but it's like a different version of you. It's like you gain, you know, new game plus.
In case you missed the symbolic significance of New Game Plus is something that happens when you complete a video game. You play it in its entirety, you get to the end, you're not ready for it to be finished, and so you start over again. You start New Game Plus, and what the developers do is they give you an additional ability on top of your normal abilities for a second playthrough.
It's like you're 31, like you feel like you have the life's basics figured out. Now I'm realizing I don't have a fucking clue about anything. for the first time ever, I can walk past like a clothing store and be like, hey, I like that. And it's funny, like, I always used to be jealous of women because they had all the better clothing options. There are so many different clothing options for women. I used to be so jealous about it. It never occurred to me. It was like, because I want to wear it. Like,
I asked Ashley if she was enjoying shopping more now.
I own 5 dresses already.
Really?
And I can't wear any of them because it's fucking 3 degrees outside. But I am super stoked for nice weather to turn around.
Remember earlier when James was talking about going back to his grandmother's place to sort through her belongings? While talking to Ashley, I realized that there was another level to that story.
It was the most pedestrian, normal day. I still, to this day, I'm trying to reconcile how this all kind of happened when it did. It was all just normal family conversations. Had dinner, piled myself into the car, and started driving. Just outside of the Hamilton limits, there's a bridge that connects Hamilton and Burlington, the Skyway Bridge. And by the time I was on that bridge, my brain just like clicked. This is a thing you have to deal with now. I've been dealing with identity issues since I was like 8. But it's always taken some formless, nebulous shape. It was never concrete. It was never in terms of statements. It was always just kind of vague feelings or questions. But like, this was the first time it ever was just like, this is a thing, deal with it. And I basically spent the entire drive home, about an hour and 15 minutes, on the verge of a panic attack because I didn't know what the fuck to do. There's just like such a domino effect of repercussions of having to come to terms with that, that like I was not qualified in that particular moment to deal with. All of these vague feelings I'd had prior, because they'd never been anything concrete, they'd been real easy to just kind of like cram down again and put off. This time it was concrete. It was like a mission statement in my brain. It was like, boom, this is you now. When it's formless, you can kind of just like ignore it and pretend that it's not there, but you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. That's your new reality. And now you just have to figure out what kind of is next.
I asked Ashley if it would be accurate for me to say that she got into the car as James, but got out of the car as Ashley.
Definitely. I was definitely not the same James that went into the car. That's for damn sure. It was definitely the small first step to whatever was coming next. Because at the time, I didn't really know. I have a sense of kind of vaguely big picture what that means. I didn't know any of like the actual practical elements to it, how long that would take, how long should it, you know. And there's also like a lot of mainstream attention to trans people as tends to be to like a certain type of trans person. How many trans prostitutes are there on television or in movies, right? Anytime there seems to be a trans character of significance, they're either suicidal or they're a prostitute or both. There's not a wide range. It's getting better, but like there's not a super wide range of trans people in kind of mainstream media. It makes it easy to kind of look out at the world at what's there and say, oh, well, that's not me, so maybe that's not me at all. You know, it's kind of like any other kind of representation. It's like until you see someone like you doing it, there's kind of a gap between you and knowing that you're capable of it. And so I'd never looked out into the world and saw anybody that represented me in a way that I understood. And there's all these kind of myths about, you know, coming to terms with your identity is that beforehand you're like really depressed or you're on the verge of, you know, suicidal tendencies. And I was never that. I always thought of myself as relatively happy. In the dark of night when I would have like really vulnerable moments and I'd be like, hey, Google, am I trans? You know, Google would be like, here's some articles you can read. And I'd read them and I'd be like, oh, well, I've never been depressed before. So I guess that's not me. The other 9 things in the list of 10 are, but that one's not. So I'm safe. All of this is kind of like running through my head the whole drive home by myself. My girlfriend is not home all weekend. She's off at work. I'm just in the house, me and my 3 cats, and I basically just got home, sat down, and played video games all weekend and tried to relax, basically, like tried to calm myself. It didn't work very well. I didn't go out of sleep that weekend. I was hoping and praying with every fiber of my being that it would go away again. I I read an article by a trans author named Mia Violet, and the title of the article was Yes, You Are Trans Enough. And it was basically an article debunking the myth of the tragic trans person, which I was referring to earlier as kind of like the cornerstone mainstream trans character. And it was like, no, you don't have to have been depressed for your dysphoria to be legitimate. And no, you don't have to be this person for you. And basically just broke down all of these myths of like, there's no one right way to be a trans person, just like there's no one right way to be any kind of person. If these are feelings you are having, they're legitimate, and nobody gets to take that away from you or say otherwise.
I wondered if Ashley felt differently out in the world now.
I finally feel good, and I'm like, this is what everybody else gets. Shit, like... I always had this kind of uncomfortability with whoever was on the other side of the mirror, but it was never in like a, oh man, I could really afford to lose 10 pounds kind of way, like it is with most people where they're like, I see me, but I want to see a better version of me. It was like, I don't know you very well. You know, I know that this is, I'm getting, you know, what's looking back at me, but there's just something wrong over here. I never was able to put form to it until now. And now it's like, yeah, of course I didn't, you know, put a lot of effort in and didn't care what I looked like because it was all upside down. When I finally grew up and kind of like had my own place, when these things would come up, I was always too chicken to bring anything into the house that I could later be caught with. Because prior to coming to terms and accepting this stuff, it always came packaged with a huge ball of shame. Any thoughts or feelings I would have related to this or any actions I would take, you know, small as they may be related to this, was always met with great shame afterwards. You know, almost like, you know, an addict who slips up, you know, on the road to recovery. It's like they do it in the moment, they have no thoughts of consequences, but it's immediately afterwards, it's just shame and regret and fuck, like, what have I done? As James, I was very emotionally kind of distant. And I wouldn't talk about my feelings a lot. I wouldn't talk about personal stuff very much because I knew there were things that I couldn't tell people because if people knew that about me, they wouldn't like me anymore. Now that I'm just kind of like the purest version of me, I'm trying to get better at like being outwardly emotional and telling people how I feel about stuff, being emotional towards my friends and stuff like that, because I've been the kind of person who like, you know how much I like you by how much I give you shit. Like one of those sorts of friend, my best friends in the world. I don't know if I've ever told them I love them. Like, and maybe that's toxic masculinity. Guys aren't supposed to have those emotions and like be really emotive and vocal about that stuff. Or maybe it's just that I've always been kind of closed off because to be completely in tune with my emotions would have led me here, you know, which was a scary thought 15 years ago.
Ashley has a girlfriend. The same girlfriend that she had when she was James.
The number of times that I like wanted to blurt it out at her, you know, are numerous. And just it always became like, now's not the right time. Now's not the right time. We'll do it when it's the right time. But of course, like the perfect time for this conversation doesn't actually exist. It just became an excuse to not say anything because I was a chicken shit. And the minute I said it out loud, it was for real.
Turns out Ashley's girlfriend has been incredibly important in helping her become the kind of woman she wants to be. In larger, more abstract ways, and in smaller, more tangible, more heartbreakingly sweet ways, like the makeup chart.
Because I'd literally never done it before like December. I didn't understand even the most basic fundamentals. When I first started, because I was so new to it, it took a lot longer. It would take me about an hour to get ready. Because I just was so new to everything and like I couldn't remember things. My girlfriend prepared like a chart for me that told me what to do in what order and stuff like that.
People develop intimate relationships with video game characters. They've been doing it for years. Sometimes those characters are colorful and banal like Mario, and sometimes the characters are badass super bitches.
Watch Dogs 2 has a prominent trans character, which is pretty badass. She's like the mayor of the city. I thought that was really cool because they, especially because they don't make a big deal out of it. She's just one of the characters in the story. I thought it was really cool that they included a trans character in Dragon Age Inquisition. He's not a playable character and you can't add him to your party or anything like that. But I would go back to like my keep and hang out with him and see what he was up to all the time. Like, We're definitely moving in the right direction, I think, in terms of like the way trans people are represented. It's just like, just a little faster, guys. Like.
I made some calls, pulled some strings, and I surprised Ashley with a phone call from the director of the new game, Mass Effect Andromeda, Mac Walters.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk. That was really cool of you.
Oh, yeah. I love to. I know that we hear, you know, from the fans, the good and the bad, but, you know, we're here talking about a bit more of the good today. And I think, you know, it is always inspiring, not just for me, but for the team, to know that fans have connected with what we've created in a way that is meaningful just beyond playing a video game. And when I go to cons or any public events, I think that's one of the things I enjoy most, is because you get to connect with the fans and they'll tell you a story about what it meant to them. And it's really nice to sort of, you know, especially at this time, which we're heads down, trying to get another game out the door. Remember that it isn't just a game, and at least not to everyone, and that it can be more.
Ashley gathered her things, got ready to leave. She's growing out her hair, but for now, she's still wearing the wig. She bundled up. I didn't hug Ashley before she left. I thought about it. I feel like I could have hugged her. I should have hugged her. I regret not hugging her. Because I realized, as she was leaving, that this coke-drinking, cat-loving, video game-playing weirdo, she is my first friend in Toronto. Look out, world. Here comes a badass super bitch. Ashley Cooper is a screenwriter and film director. You can watch her short film Interview with a Time Traveler on Vimeo.com, V-I-M-E-O, and you can read her blog on Medium under Ashley J. Cooper. And her book, Kickstarter for Filmmakers, can be found on Amazon.ca. Special thanks to Mac Walters from BioWare, who managed to find time to talk to us just before he pushed Andromeda out the door. I don't know how he did that, but thanks so much, Mac. To Gino Talons and Brad Hildebrand from Electronic Arts. To filmmaker and writer Sarah Deakins for her editing help. To Stephen Nikolic for his ongoing technical support. Thanks to JP Davidson and Chris Diamond for their notes on earlier versions of this episode. And to Chief and B, my two cats, for their continuing emotional support. Mass Effect Andromeda is in stores now. It's available for the Xbox One, the PlayStation 4, and the PC. Heavily Pixelated is the name of the show. Tell your friends about it. I need more listeners. And until next time, I'm Scott C. Jones. I'll see you then.